Hello, you're listening to Radio Regent at RadioRegent.com. My name's David Wall. The name of this program is Radio Regent News and Views. Happy New Year! This is our first show of 2021, and today we focus on volunteer activism in increasingly challenging times. We'll hear two interviews conducted by Justice for Migrant Workers volunteer Fabio Heredia Casalins with people working with FoodShare to bring highly needed resources to migrant workers and other marginalized communities. And we'll also hear a conversation between journalist Minerva Navasca and a youth activist named Dominique about the continuing importance of the Black Lives Matter movement and how young people are a vital part of the struggle. But first, as promised, here's an interview conducted by Fabio Heredia Casalins with FoodShare and Justice for Migrant Workers volunteer Elizabeth Mudeño.
FoodShare has produce boxes and fruit boxes, so veg and fruit boxes, that we distribute to migrant workers or other vulnerable workers across Ontario. Basically to make sure that they're also being well-fed and cared for. A lot of them have housing that is like tied to their workers, or they might be quarantining, or just like conditions that make it difficult for them to actually access fresh produce and like proper food. Basically every weekend for the last, from October through December, we've been doing weekend drop-offs of these good food boxes from FoodShare. So the grant covers our purchase of the boxes, our ability to have a driver and get gas. That's basically it. Sorry, I'm not sure if that was like a very good answer.
No, that was great. I guess in terms of, I think you said like good food. So I guess part of that is, of course, like you said, like fresh produce, fruits and vegetables, stuff like that. But then also, I guess from what I understand, like a big emphasis is on like culturally appropriate food. So I guess, I don't know if you could kind of like elaborate on like why that's important, or, and also just the idea of like how this is different from like a food drive, for example, or like a traditional, kind of charity or something like that.
That's like such a great question. I feel like I'm gonna bomb this interview. Okay,
it's a series of clips for our socials. It's not like a, don't feel like pressure.
I'm already going under. I wonder if we could just like have maybe I'll frame this in my mind as just a discussion, a preliminary discussion.
It is a discussion.
Okay. It's interesting because like the culturally appropriate food, I think, kind of comes out of like the program is not just good food boxes. It's also groceries and meals. So like for the folks that are in quarantine right now because of the second wave, they're getting it's like a lot of it is Caribbean workers, and they're getting like proper Caribbean food, like roti and just food that workers are actually familiar with. And they're able to like put in their orders for what they want. And we're partnering with a restaurant. I believe partnering with Devon House to make that possible. So that's where like the culturally specific food comes in. And then, similarly so with like groceries, right? We're not just giving them like generic groceries that we think they need. Like everything is based on directly on what they ask for. And sometimes that is culturally specific food or just other food that they're having difficulty accessing where they are. It can just be like simple staples, and they give us quantities, and that's basically what that is. And then with the good food box program, like there is some like, I don't know, there's like plantain or squash, or there's like a good mix of produce there that some of it actually does resonate with the workers as being culturally appropriate, or just like food that they're interested in, but they don't have, there's no control over what's in the good food boxes. we just like send them a list of what's in them. But yeah, in that area, they don't have any control. Part's not usable.
Well, okay. Wait, sorry. I just had a question about the, so individual workers actually like order what they want in the other food boxes?
No, not in any food boxes. If they want groceries, like some of them have.
Oh, groceries. Oh, I see.
Specific groceries, but you can't order specific things from a good, like either just like you say whether or not, you want a produce box or a fruit box. And then if you want, we can tell you what's in the boxes. But yeah, you just have to say whether or not you want a produce box.
Cool. Yeah. Well, that, okay. So yeah, that's interesting that, but in terms of the groceries, so you do these, so I guess, because that's a huge undertaking. I'm just thinking, I didn't even know that was a thing. Like, to have like whatever, I don't know how many names, but, or how many individuals like having specific orders, like.
Yeah, it's like something that's happening more now, like specifically with the training workers. So that like, yeah, because there's all these like training workers that are stranded here, as well as folks in quarantine. Like it's specifically just a lot of coordination, mostly directly through Chris. What they specifically want, and then having someone who's either in the area, like in Windsor, Essex, or someone from here, take those groceries and then take those orders and then get all those specific groceries. Before the quarantine, it was just like small amounts. Yeah, and then food boxes were the main demand.
Cool. Yeah, I guess that's a good segue to kind of talk more broadly about like mutual aid and the idea of, you know, different people kind of like on the ground or in the community kind of, you know, helping one another in different ways or kind of, in a sense, being there I don't know what the word would be, but to kind of like fill in those holes where the traditional like emergency systems or benefit systems maybe doesn't work. Like maybe whether it's the government or other, you know, more traditional models of aid. So yeah, I guess we already kind of touched on it, but what do you think about? Well, yeah, I don't know. Just as a discussion, just expanding on what you just said, like in terms of, you know, the people involved are, you know, people in the area and whatnot. So what has it been like working with, you know, community members or how do you go about like finding people in these different communities to help? I guess, I don't even know where I'm going with that question, but did that make sense at all? Or should I try to?
Yeah, there's like different parts to that question, but I do have to say, like, Chris is the link, you know? Like,
In every endeavor,
and this is probably also off the record, this part, maybe because it's too specific, I think, to be in a social media thing, but like, just the usually what I do is like, Chris, I have to put in an order by Friday. Can you tell me how many boxes we need? And then he'll be like, sometimes he'll just tell me, like, 100. And then we put in 100. And then by Monday, I'm like, Chris, where are these 100 boxes going? And then they'd be like, can you contact this person? Can you contact this person and ask them how many boxes they need? And then from there, we slowly get rid of the 100. And then, it'll be like, ask Elizabeth Ha how many boxes she needs. Ask Daniela, ask like all these people. And yeah, then we find out where they're going. And then I talk to Abdullah and I'm like, these are all the addresses. And he's like, okay, I'm going to decide whether these should be Saturday or Sunday drop-offs and what's feasible. And he'll be like, okay, like that's really far from this. Or like, that's going to be an 18-hour day, but I can do it or I can't do it. Let's do it on Sunday. So it's like, it's a little bit chaotic. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like that's not social media stuff, but that's pretty much what the process is like. And then there are on-site coordinators. So like if Elizabeth Haas, sometimes I just tell her like, we have 40 unclaimed boxes. Can I give them to you? And she'll be like, yeah, you can meet me in Leamington. And she'll like pick up all the boxes from Leamington and then have like a drop off in Windsor. And then she'll coordinate who to like give them to. And like people like Sarah Khan have helped like distribute the boxes to like their, sometimes we get exact addresses for farmers and like we drop them off to them directly. And then sometimes there's people that are just like the link. So an intermediary between the farm and our driver, partially for our driver's safety, also partially for, partially for our driver's safety and then also for, I guess it's basically like there's this understanding that like farmers wouldn't actually be down with this program. You know, like they don't want to be like seen as like not feeding their workers. So like having this intermediary means that we can, just basically protect Abdullah as a driver.
Right.
That part also, I don't know if it's too hard for social media.
I mean, the way I would edit it would not include like specifics, I guess, about people or like, you know, different tactics that we wanted to keep private. But I do think it's important I think it's interesting, you know, to talk about like how, like it is this thing that's kind of like on, you know, on the fly where we're constantly responding to like different demands or different, you know, we're working directly. Sorry?
No, that's perfect. Can you just take that text and then have me nodding and then use that audio. That's perfect.
Yes. Awesome. But yeah, I mean, it's like, I think it's important also because, you know, a lot of these other, I think that like a lot of traditional models, they're more like, they're less directly connected to, you know, the communities that they're serving or that they're aiding in that kind of model. So I think it's just, I think even just mentioning how like on the fly it is and the fact that you're able to, you know, make, I don't know. I think that whole process is really interesting. Just this kind of like, and even the thing about the, you know, the farms not necessarily being down or whatever, it's like it's almost like the system is set up in a way where there are these obstacles and there are these, you know, there would never be a, you know, official government funded thing where the farmer's not totally, where the farmer's like openly against it or like, you know, they wouldn't, I don't know. Anyway, I don't even know where I was going with that, but. all right. Well, I feel like that's pretty much it.
Oh man.
We can just keep talking about it.
Okay.
I guess what would be the long term, because I think there's obviously the fear that like, not fear, but like, we don't want to like all overly glorify these kind of like, you know, like there's in disaster situations and the emergency response in communities, like there's often this like media narrative where it's like, oh, like people coming together and helping each other, which is, you know, it's obviously beautiful and like very helpful in specific situations, but it also highlights, you know, where the government might be failing or where other, so I guess, you know, in an ideal world, would this kind of thing not exist? Or what is the kind of like long-term hopes of like a project like this? Is it like that the government will see what we're doing and like emulate it in the future or that we'll get funded more or something or you know?
I feel like you kind of already captured it. I don't know. Like, really, it would just be like the farmers buy in directly to food share and then have like the food delivered. So there's like less, you know, we cut out all the middlemen and the farmers just like, you know, a compliment, like for you, a complimentary produce for this agricultural worker. Like, it doesn't even sound that insane. That maybe that's a like what the, but also, I don't know, as a preference of the workers, like if a preference would be that, like, actually, I would just rather have like the mobility and funds to be able to just like buy my own grocery, like get what I need. Like, maybe that would be the preference, you know, the same way that we do, I guess, like the same way that we, if we wanted to, we could also have produce boxes delivered to our houses, but we're like, no, I'm the one time I go outside is to groceries. Like, I'd rather get my groceries, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it would just be it would just be at the preference of the worker. Yeah. And also like you said, like, it is an emergency food box program. Like, the idea is that, like, this isn't really a sustainable effort. Obviously it is a grant. Grants are finite. All these things are finite and like kind of quickly sort of cobbled together and like luckily work out. But ideally, yeah, the government is able to step up and like the system actually changes in a way that doesn't necessitate the need for food boxes.
That was Fabio Heredia Castellans in conversation with Elizabeth Mudeño of FoodShare and Justice for Migrant Workers. You're listening to Radio Regent at radioregent.com. Here's a conversation between journalist Minerva Nevaska and youth activist Dominique.
Hi, my name is Dominique. I am a BLM advocate and supporter. My connection to BLM, probably the biggest one, is that I myself am Black, so, you know, that plays a little part into it. I also feel that the Black community is not represented as well in the society. So by having this movement, we kind of are pushing our race to the forefront, as in, like, we matter as well.
Mm-hmm. So ever since George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Elijah McClain's deaths, stories regarding BLM and the police brutality regarding Black youth or Black people in general have spread all over the news. However, obviously, right, these stories didn't really start with them, before there was Philando Castile and Tamir Rice and Michael Brown and so many others. Right. So as a youth, media has been a big part of your upbringing. What was your reaction typically when you hear stories like?
I don't want to say you get desensitized, but you see stories like this happen so often, mm-hmm, that, you know, over time, it feels very repetitive, which is really sad to say. You see a story and then you kind of just wait for the next one to happen, really. Like, so many Black people are being killed or arrested or being attacked by the police. It's a never-ending process. At points, you do feel dejected. And then I also feel like there's also points where maybe your, like, motivation is kind of rekindled to fight for what's right for Black people and people in general.
So with all of these news about police brutality, have you seen an impact towards those close to you or your general community?
My community does happen to be one where everything seems to be swept under the rug. It's kind of like, I like to describe it as like a utopian dystopia, just because obviously racism and brutality happens everywhere in the world, but I feel like in the area I live in, just because it doesn't happen or it's not seen in the forefront as often, we kind of just pretend that it doesn't exist. We do see a lot of microaggressions here. Well, I remember back in high school, they'd be like, wow, you're really smart for like a Black girl. It was like some sort of like surprise, because I got straight A's. I was, you know, top 10 in my school, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And another thing is maybe the way I act. I think that's also a microaggression. You know, Black people are supposed to supposedly be loud, aggressive, all this stuff. I'm very reserved, very quiet. So I think a lot of the time people are like, you act very white, stuff like that. So it's kind of like there's a negative connotation with being Black, and they take the idea of all these like sought after things. So, you know, the idea of being, you know, cool, calm, and collected, the idea of being intelligent, the idea of being creative, they associate that with the idea of being white and therefore superior. Mm-hmm. So, those are a couple of microaggressions I've dealt with. I've been called the N-word a couple times. Yeah, that's just the beginning of the list. Just to give you like a general taste.
And how do you normally deal with comments like these? Do you just go on about your day?
In the past, I would say that I would kind of, you know, try to laugh it off, you know, not make a big deal about it. As I'm learning, I find it better to, you know, kind of take these comments and face them head on. Not like aggressively. My whole thing is that I try to educate first.
Do you find that when you usually take this approach, people listen? What is their general reaction?
Most of the people I associate with, they will take the time to listen. I'm a college student now, so I've gotten to see like a general like increase in not tolerance, but understanding maybe about how their words and their actions impact me. When I kind of like interact with people, depending on really how old they are and their maturity is really what affects whether or not they respond well or poorly to what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Are there any groups of people, or have you had any instances where you don't even bother talking about racism and all of these microaggressions in an educated way, where you feel like it's not worth your time to discuss all of that?
I will say I do know a couple of people. I won't like name any names, but I won't do that here. Yeah. I've known them since they were in elementary school, really. And I've tried to, you know, kind of explain to them why certain things that they do are like wrong. But their thing is that all of these things are jokes to them. So they're like, oh, she doesn't have a sense of humor, you know, stuff like that. Even though the things that they're saying are not funny, they're more problematic and hurtful to like my well-being and other people's well-being. As of recently, it definitely has taken more of a toll, just because I've also grown as a person. Like, I used to be really kind of like go with the flow, you know, not a big deal about things, trying not to make a big deal of things, because I don't know, I felt that like my uncomfort was unwarranted, and now I understand that my uncomfort is warranted. So I feel like nowadays I do respond more like viscerally to, you know, seeing something on social media or hearing something that someone said. Just because I'm growing into my identity as a Black woman, that, and like, this is something I'm now identifying with like firsthand.
Have you had to have conversations with any loved ones that may or may not share your own perspectives regarding race?
I think maybe the issue stems most from like how we act upon hearing news. Like, I try to be on the forefront of like, you know, protesting and all this stuff. And my family seems to be a little more reserved than I am. I just last month, like on my birthday, there was a protest that I wanted to go to that I did go to. But before that, I like had a very like, you know, heated conversation with my mom, because her thing is that she's afraid about like my well-being, because you do know like that some protests, like sometimes, you know, cops or police do come and they do kind of, things do kind of get messy. That's where she was coming from. So she wanted me to maybe support the Black Lives Matter movement, from, you know, a less active area. Meanwhile, I really wanted to go to the protest because I felt that was the best way for me to support the movement. So it's less like a political thing, and I think it's more just like, you know, how we approach this activism.
Mm-hmm. So like protests, have you been going to a lot of rallies or marches ever since everything has sort of sparked up?
I've only been to the one protest so far. We're still having multiple in my township, but every time there is one, it seems that I have something else to do. So I'm trying to find that, like just the one that like I can go to, and, you know, I can continue protesting like with all my allies and the people in my community.
Mm-hmm.
We're working on it. It's a work in progress.
Yeah. It's enough, right? trying your best.
Exactly, yeah.
So how do you normally prepare for a protest? Do you have a lot of people to go with you? What are some safety precautions that you yourself take?
So when I do go to a protest, I do try to, you know, form a group of people or, you know, meet up with friends. I prepare my signs. You bring water, just basics, really.
And how do you feel about the media's representation of protests?
A lot of the time, the media kind of, you know, villainizes protesters. They're talking about how protesting is spiking corona rates. They're talking about how protesters are looting. I feel like they're focusing on a lot of negatives that need to be thoroughly, like, talked about, because the main idea of the protest is for it to be peaceful. Does it get out of hand sometimes? Yes. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that's what, like, the news really focuses on. You know, it always focuses on the bad. It never takes the time to pay attention to the good that protests are doing. So to people that are going to protests that don't have a lot of experience with it, I want to say, you know, be careful. If you can use your race to your advantage, as an ally, if you're an ally that maybe is white or white passing, the use of your privilege for the benefit of the protest is very much appreciated. First and foremost, stay safe and then understand what you're protesting for and its importance and its impact.
So do you have any ideas of what people who are unwilling to go out into the streets, whether it be due to COVID or just due to physical violence, the threat of physical violence erupting, do you have any other ways that they can support the movement?
Oh yeah, of course. Okay, so alternative ways. Social media is definitely a big one. Like almost every day, if not every day, I'll post something on my story that talks about, you know, a specific problem that has erupted from everything that's happening now. So you can use social media. It doesn't matter if it's Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook, anywhere you can reach people. I'll talk about not only Black people, but other minority groups and other groups that are often oppressed.
There is intersectionality and there is the whole backlash of all lives matter. What is the difference between sharing focus to other marginalized groups and all lives matter?
I feel like the response to Black Lives Matter by All Lives Matter is under the pretense that people are thinking that we're saying Black Lives Matter only. That's not the statement. That's not what's being implied by the hashtag BLM. When we say Black Lives Matter, we mean Black Lives Matter too. Obviously, All Lives Matter, we understand that. But it seems that Black Lives Matter a lot less than other identities do. Someone who truly supported the idea of All Lives Mattering would not be upset by the specification of a life mattering.
Yeah, definitely. Have you encountered anyone in real life that shares the sentiment of All Lives Matter?
I try to make sure I don't follow people who, you know, perpetuate ideas that are harmful to me. Mm-hmm. And I make sure they don't follow me because it's difficult to reach common ground there. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel like if they were to support the topics that we were talking about before, said movements, do you think that that is almost sort of an insult to you and your existence?
I don't think it's like insult to my existence, much more as it is like ignorance to my existence. I feel like they don't understand my perspective. Mm-hmm. Like, you know how people are always saying, oh, put yourself in the other person's shoes. Mm-hmm. I feel like my shoes are too small for them to wear. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that's very powerful. Yeah. So do you have any ideas of what people who are unwilling to go out into the streets, whether it be due to COVID or just due to physical violence, the threat of physical violence erupting, do you have any other ways that they can support the movement?
Oh, yeah, of course. Okay, so alternative ways. So there are also a lot of charities, GoFundMes that you can support. But if you don't have the monetary like ability to do so, you can also do things like email senators, email people. You can call people up. You know, get laws moving. I feel like protesting is often seen as like the only way, but there are so many ways you can be proactive at home.
So on your birthday, you started a fundraiser for BLM charities. Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit about your experience regarding that?
So I did start a charity. It was Relief for Corrupt Prison Systems. I just wanted to raise $200, you know, do my part. Another way I could be an activist in the BLM movement. I ended up reaching my goal of $200. And mm-hmm. so all that money went to that relief fund. I just did that because, you know, you get a lot of clout on your birthday. Mm-hmm. So I feel like if I have clout, why not use it for like a good cause?
Yeah.
You know.
And so how has the people around you reacted to this fundraiser?
They were all pretty positive for the most part. Like, the people around me were the ones who were donating to the fundraiser. Mm-hmm. So like whenever I saw like a little donation, like, notification from a certain person, I'd be like, oh, thank you. I'd type them a little note, like, thank you for donating to my fund. And they'd be like, of course, like, this is a good cause. So mm-hmm. it's been pretty positive, like, response.
Mm-hmm. So would you recommend that other youth who do not have the financial means to donate themselves, would you recommend that they take a similar approach to what you have done?
I think so, yeah. Like, if you can start a fundraiser and you can get money from other people to put towards these charities and just other funds, mm-hmm. By all means do it. Like, it doesn't hurt you to try, you know. $5 is still $5 towards, you know, equality. It doesn't matter if it's $5 or like $5 million. Every cent counts towards these causes.
How do you think students or youth can do to better support the movement?
Well, definitely talk to, you know, your peers about microaggressions, macroaggressions, because you know what they say, the youth are the future. We can continue like representing ourselves in protest or, you know, showing interest in, you know, having laws like overridden or made, then I think we're doing our job.
What would you say to people who want to keep the fight going, however, they are just feeling like it's too heavy for the moment? Do you have anything to say to them?
Yeah, I'd say to those people that, you know, it's okay to have to take a break sometimes. Like, it does get overwhelming sometimes. Regroup, because you can't do your best, you can't do what you can for the movement if you're feeling run down. It's obvious that like we want to give our 100% to, like, you know, fighting all the corruption and the racism, all that stuff, but if you're feeling, you know, out of it, dejected, disengaged, just self-care is important. You know, the Black Lives Matter movement, it was founded in 2013. So we've been around for years, really. I think like with any movement, you know, when things happen, you see like, you know, spikes in like activism, regarding and retaining to any movement. So we're currently in a spike, but I really hope that spike, like, we continue to have all this like activism like going on, and then maybe I'll even spike even more. So I don't want to say it's trendy. It's definitely something that's like very prevalent right now and fresh in people's minds and in the forefront of people's minds. But it's not a trend to hop on. You shouldn't treat it like that. It's something, it's a community, it's a movement that is working towards the greater good of everyone.
That was journalist Minerva Navaska in conversation with youth activist Dominique. You're listening to Radio Regent at RadioRegent.com. Now I present a second interview conducted by Fabio Heredia Castellans of Justice for Migrant Workers with Food Share and Justice for Migrant Workers activist Abdullah Raed.
My name is Abdullah. I'm newcomer to Canada. I came as a refugee and I work as a driver. I deliver food. I deliver grocery. I volunteer also in driving. I volunteer in delivering good food boxes to workers in need, to immigrants without any status, to couriers where they lost their job, They can't access CERB. They can't access EI. They need support. So I volunteer and trying to help them to send them good food boxes or any other type of support that they need. Or sometimes like newcomers, they have lack of information and they need help. So I try to help as maximum as I can. And that's pretty it.
Right. And so you do a lot of volunteer work. That's interesting that you and also, sorry, where did you say you were from, if you don't mind me asking?
I'm originally from Syria.
Oh, okay. And you came here recently or?
Yeah, like around like maybe 2 years.
Okay, awesome. Yeah. So I guess, just out of curiosity, like how did you first get involved with like activism and like volunteering and like, you know, this community, like helping out in the community? Or
it's a funny story, actually. So as I told you, I'm a refugee. And then I used to deliver food with Foodora. And one of the days my account was deactivated and I didn't even get any like email notice or anything. I went to my car, I turned it on, I went to start my shift, I couldn't log in. They changed my password. When I like sent them email and they responded like after 3 or 4 days, I lost a lot of shifts at that time. So they were like, oh, your account was deactivated. And I was like, hold on, I don't have any notice about it. What did I do? And they were like, sir, give me your phone number. I'm going to call you and explain it to you. And I was like, okay. So he called me like half an hour later. And he was like, sir, I checked your profile. And unfortunately, on certain date, on certain time, you are delivering food from this restaurant to this customer. And you threatened the restaurant that you have a bomb and you will bomb yourself. Then I was like, hold on. So this is very nice breaking news. Like, a Syrian refugee working with I think it cut off. So
yeah, it did. But I heard most of it. Sorry, keep going.
So I was saying like it's a nice breaking news that a Syrian refugee is trying to bomb a restaurant while delivering with Foodora. I was like, listen, you tell me I had like maybe I gave a bad service, I didn't use my bag, anything you want. Maybe sexual assault, I understand. Anything you want. But like to say a bomb, this is not a joke. And you just can't fire someone. This is a national security issue. You have to call the 911 and inform them that this person having a bomb around, right?
Wait, so the actual restaurant, they're the ones who said that?
Yeah. And actually that was like before they went with bankruptcy, like with a couple of weeks or maybe like 5 or 6 weeks. And that the way they were kicking out people, some of them like, oh, you didn't use your bag. Some of them like sexual assault. Everyone gave him a different reason. For me, it was a bomb. And then when I was like, I'm very good in writing emails. So I wrote email that this is a national security thing. And if I didn't do it and I'm going to fight it and I'm going to report it to 911 and say that what you're saying is wrong. So they called me again and they're like, hold on, it was a mistake. So actually there was two drivers at that time. One driver which had the bomb and we canceled the order from him and we gave it to you. So we mixed up. So I told him, oh, okay, so you fired the good driver and you kept the bad driver with the bomb. And at that time I joined the union. I knew about it. They helped me to write my emails, which looked so professional. Because at that time, like, you can tell from my language that I'm not so good. So food service helped me to draft the email and I was able to go back to the platform. And then when they went into bankruptcy and we lost our job, I had more time to involve with food service. Food service helped the courier a lot. Where they were providing good food boxes. They provided some like gift funds to drivers so they can like just carry on with their life. And from that time, I understand that just working under big companies is not the good thing to survive. The good thing maybe to join national unions and to expand your connection, to expand your knowledge. And most important thing, the right to know what is your rights and to fight for your rights and fight for newcomers' rights, immigrants' rights, people without a status, student people which they can't work now because of COVID-19. And I saw that how, like me as a courier, I was left over. No one like said like, oh, you can apply for the CRB, you can take free mask or anything. So I joined food stores and I was expanding. Now I'm trying to join other unions too, because I feel I have a lot to give to this community, and this will help a lot of people. As I was like, in my journey in Canada, I was stuck for a certain time where I couldn't work because of my work permit. And the same case is going with my family. So also I'm trying to connect with like other unions, like the Migrant Rights Network, to see how can I make my sound reach more unions. And it happened for me to know about Justicia and the farmers. And I was able to watch some pictures and videos of how they live. I didn't assume that there's people living in this situation in Canada. I would assume it in a different part of the world, but not in Canada. Like 10 people in the same room, washrooms, which is so dirty. They don't have like a water heater or air conditioning in the summer. That was so bad for me. I felt so sad. I felt so sorry for them. And that's when I planned to join more. And I started delivering those, like volunteering and delivering those box, good food boxes. And I'm ready to provide whatever I can.
That's an amazing story, man. Like that journey from, you know, just the fact that it was your own practical needs, and like the fact that people were kind of abusing, you know, potentially like abusing you as a newcomer, trying to, you know, assuming that you won't have any help, or someone won't be able to help you defend yourself, or assuming that you would be, you know, maybe too scared or something to even, you know, speak up for yourself. So I think that's an amazing journey that the, you know, it just shows that, you know, a lot of these efforts come out of the people closest to the issues are the ones who kind of really know, you know, where these problems are. And
yeah.
But I guess, yeah, just because you basically told me like the whole story of how you got to this food box distribution. So I guess, can you explain that the food box distribution from your point of view, and like, just in terms of your involvement as well as, you know, what it is in general.
So as I told you, when Fedora went into bankruptcy, I used to get those good food boxes. And since I have a very limited income, I usually don't buy fresh vegetables. I usually buy the frozen one. For me, in some cases it's cheaper, some cases it will last longer. And then food stores union was able to help us and provide us with good food boxes, which make my life so different. I missed organic vegetables, fresh fruit. So it changed my life a lot, and it saved a lot of money for me. And I was able to reach to products which I wouldn't be able to pay for. And then I heard about the farmers, and I heard how they have a limited rights, limited income, limited support from the government. And I was planning like, okay, as I get help from some people, even when like with Fedora, I was volunteering to deliver to couriers. One of them was myself. So I said like, it's a good time to show up and stand with people, with the union, to help the farmers and the workers. And I said, since I'm like, I know how I can handle those boxes, I can do it. But when I start with like delivering it for the couriers, I used to deliver between 10 to 15 boxes. When I started doing it for the farmers, it was between 150 to 300. It was a different
yeah. job
for me, but I really enjoyed it. And I was able to explore Ontario more. I expanded my knowledge in driving and highways and a lot of things. I think Justicia is doing a very good job. Like what they're doing, they're changing people's life to a better life. Just having the basic needs of food, if you have it, you can achieve more, you can think better, you can have a better life. And I really like what they're doing, and I really support it. And I also think what Foodshare is doing is very great, as Foodshare is helping a lot in coordination. They're helping and providing those boxes. They're giving us the best quality of vegetables that they have. I think you can't even find it in the market. It's very good vegetables. Mm-hmm. Whatever you have, it can last more in your fridge than whatever you buy from the grocery stores. So I'm a big fan of Foodshare and Justicia, and I follow them on all social media. And I have a hope in the future that to be more involved and a bit like more rules and like coordination, driving, volunteering, anything I can do it, because I really enjoy what I was doing, and I like what they're doing. Because when we deliver the good food boxes to people in need, and one day, it's a short story, one day when I went to Leamington, it was like end of October, and it was a rainy day. And actually, it was end of September. It was my second time there. And when I delivered the boxes, I already, like, they already start spreading those boxes. So I saw some people, they're carrying the boxes, and they carry the umbrella, and it's raining, and they're running, and you can tell from their face that they're so happy, and they just need to reach home. So that gave me, like, more positive vibes that I really have to continue doing this rather than just deliver food to someone doorstep and like, hey, leave it at the door, and he'll be like having his t-shirt as a mask, and he'll be afraid from you. So,
yeah. I mean, there's so much to that I could say about that, but that's just like, I guess, you know, is interesting how you touched on the fact that like, you know, well, first of all, it's not just that you're like, the food that we're supplying is it's not like these workers are necessarily starving or something like that. Like, it's not like they don't have any food, but they might not have access to like this high quality or the quality that they're used to back home, or even the types of foods that they would eat back home, right? Like, so I think apart from the food boxes with vegetables and whatnot, you guys, I think, I don't know if you're the one, but they also do like groceries.
Yeah.
So that's so big for, you know, they might not be able to have the time, access, or whatever to get certain groceries. So just, you know, like you were saying with your own story as a newcomer and maybe struggling financially in different ways, like it's not that you're dying of hunger, but you have to buy only like frozen produce, for example.
Exactly. Right. Right. As I told you, it's not like it's providing a better life. Right. And like, The box which we receive from Foodshare, because I receive it myself, right? The box itself, it contains vegetables and fruits around like $30 or $40. If you want to buy it in yourself, you have to pay $20. So it's very good quality and it's very good amount. And then when you give it to someone for free, and he used to buy like old vegetables or frozen ones, and he get very fresh produce and big quantities, it's making his day better. It's making his life better. It's making his health better.
Right. And not to mention that, you know, the foundation of our food system is from these workers, and they don't even have access to the food that they're making. Like, so it's crazy, right?
It's very crazy. And it makes me feel so sorry, right? And even like, when I went there and I want to stop in a restaurant or a gas station or a grocery store, even when I used to deliver the grocery myself, I couldn't find anything nearby. It's like the first grocery store is 45-minute drive or you don't have any like fast food around. Even if you're like so hungry and you just need to grab any sandwich for $3 or $4, you don't have any fast food around. And you have only like one or two gas stations in the beginning and end of the city.
You're talking about in Leamington.
Like,
or no, close to the farms.
Like, I went to one city called Chatham, Kent.
Okay, yeah.
And to Vienna. Vienna, like, they have a limited access to everything.
The whole town, or you're talking about this?
The whole town. And, like, whatever you can, like, find a convenience store. There's no grocery store. There is a convenience store. And the convenience store closed around, like, 8 p.m.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's not just a matter of, like, if they can afford those vegetables or not. Also, it's not, like...
It's not even there. It's not even available.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's so... it's also crazy. I mean, it also shows that, like, the people that you would expect to help in these situations are, you know, are not doing anything to, like, this is a service that it doesn't exist, you know, which you and our organizations are trying to fill that gap, right? So, yeah. But I think it's really interesting, you know, because these videos and are kind of a lot of them, or sorry, the theme of some of these videos that I'm making relating to the food distribution, it's all about this idea of like mutual aid.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably more familiar with that than I am because I'm just learning now about like, but anyway, you know, the fact that you, like, I think you're a great example of someone who, you know, because you're also in precarious work, and you also are a newcomer and you're aware of like how, you know, there's different ways, different types of citizens get treated differently in our society. So through that experience, you're now using your abilities to help other people in similar situations or in worse situations. And through that, you're actually more aware of a lot of these problems than, you know, the average, like, born and raised here Canadian, right?
So, you know, like when the first time when I get my first good food box, I never knew at that time there's something called food bank or food share or any organization like this. So the first time from Foodsters Union, his name was Chris. So he called me and he was like, "Hey Abdullah, what time can I come?" And I gave him a time frame, but unfortunately, I couldn't end my shift by that time. So Chris called me and I was like, "Hey, I'm sorry, but I'm not at home. You can just leave it downstairs, or you can call my buzzer code and just leave it downstairs." But he was nice enough to call my buzz number and to go up to my condo and to leave it at my door. So when I came back home, I saw the vegetables, I saw the fruits, I went inside, I started unpacking it, I was so happy. So I told my family, like, "Hey, I need to talk to Chris to thank him and to see if I can help." And Chris was so happy because at that time, he didn't, like, I was the last house away from Toronto. I live in Oakville. So I was like, "Okay, let me take care of Oakville at least." And day by day, I started volunteering more. I said, like, as Chris made my day better, now it's a good time for me to make other people's day better. I know that some people need me as I needed Chris at that time. I know this is a dream, maybe. Maybe this wouldn't happen in our life. But in my opinion, I dream of not having people in need at all, not even for like things like vegetables and fruit. What we are doing is it's very good. I needed a lot of help when I came to Canada, and I used to get some help from the government, but it wasn't good enough. I think living expenses here is so high. Like for me personally, I volunteer in 2-3 things, so it takes a lot of my time, and I do like, you know, my job is not like a certain time. It's like flexible hours, and then I do another job. So, like, in some days I work normal days I work between 16 to 20 hours a day.
Oh wow!
Is
that to this day?
Until our day.
Oh wow!
I didn't take any day off since 2.5 years.
Oh my God.
So, I think living expenses is so high. When I came to Canada, I thought it would be a different world. Unfortunately, it's the same where I came from, but it's just a matter of a different procedure, let's say that. You can see people like me or the farmers, they can't buy fresh vegetables where other people or other businesses, they're having too much money and they're even in, like with the COVID, they got use of the COVID that they're making more money and they're making more profit. But right. Those couriers or farmers, they're going lower and lower day by day. So I think we should get more united, be strong, fight for our justice, fight for our rights. I don't think that I can see the reflect of that in my life. Maybe in my kids or in my grandkids, but at least we need to do something.
Right.
You look at like people in politics or big businesses like Uber, Amazon, Skip the Dishes, Air Canada, or you can name it. Even when the pandemic happened, all they did is they cut their costs. They fired the people they're working there. Those people, they're having families, they're having kids, they're taking care of their brothers, of their parents, and they were left over in the pandemic. And those big companies, they even made more profit because they cut their expenses to the minimum.
Right.
Even like similar to Fedora, they said like, hey, we're leaving. It's a bankruptcy thing. COVID-19. Okay, but before COVID, me as a courier with Fedora, I used to get between 1 to 2 orders in an hour. In the pandemic, I used to get between 3 to 6 orders in an hour. That means you're making double the profit. And they even was stealing my wages.
Right.
With the pandemic and before the pandemic, I used to make more money. That means the customer is losing money, the courier is not making good enough money, and the big company is making more money, more profit, and they're growing big, right? I hope that we will keep doing this so we kindly can make a balance. I don't want rich people to be poor. I don't want poor people to be rich. I understand that there's a different levels and this life is like a stairs. There is a different level, but I don't want the low part of the stairs not to be secured, like farmers, couriers, drivers. They should have a better life because they're the first step. As you said, like the farmers and the food chain, they're the first step. If our first step is not built good enough, the stair will not be able to hold itself, right? And one day it's going to break. So,
exactly.
Yeah, I hope we will keep doing this. We'll try to make a kind of a balance. And as I told you, as a refugee, as a newcomer, as someone who's struggling to pay his living expenses, work 16 to 20 hours a day, I'm still available to offer my help in anyhow to make our life and the future generation life better.
That was Justice for Migrant Workers volunteer Fabio Heredia-Castellans in conversation with Abdullah Raed. You're listening to Radio Regent at RadioRegent.com. Well, we've come to the end of our show. We'd like to thank you all for listening, and we'd like to thank the folks who helped put it together, including Fabio Heredia-Castellans, Moylan Samuels, Adonis Huggins, Tyrone McLean Wilson, and Pat Whitaker. Once again, my name is David Wall. Until next time, we hope you have a healthy and safe week.